Guess who's back?
Flapjacks and waffles. We're here.
Wait, what are you even talking about? Flapjacks and waffles.
That's my new tagline.
That doesn't sound like a good tagline.
We have just confused everyone.
I'm adjusting my levels here. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, what?
I don't know what's going on. Hey, this is the Big Planet Comics Podcast, you guys.
Ahoy.
This is episode 56.
Yeah, 56.
I definitely had to check to make sure that this was episode 56. My name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I am still Jared.
This has been a long day, you guys.
Still Jared.
Do this. All right, so I'm just going to read all this so it goes pretty fast.
Do it.
We got a lot of stuff tonight. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/BigPlanetComics. Or you can follow us on Twitter at BigPlanetComics. And those are the things you can do. You can also send us questions at podcast@bigplanetcomics.com or call the podcast hotline at 1703-539-CAST. What was that number again?
I don't know.
1703-539-CAST. Cast. All right. So, what's been going on, you guys?
Someone smashed the window in my car and stole my stereo.
That is true. We are. This is like car talk, basically. This show has become car talk.
It's true. I had to try and up it from Nick's statuses.
You are not even close.
You guys are hick and hock. So how was that? They stole your nice stereo?
Yeah, I honestly didn't realize that there was anything worth stealing in my car. Because who steals stereos? And then I did realize they did take the 5 quarters that were in my change drawer. So
wow.
Clearly these are your people who needed the money more than me.
From what I understand, your stereo has a removable face.
It does. They remove that as well.
That sounds not great. But that's what happens when you move into the big city. Big city boy.
Into the big, big city.
But I did see a crack addict with an awesome stereo walking down the street the other day.
Did you?
Yep.
He just had it like plugged in. He had like headphones plugged into it. He's running it off a car battery.
He's carrying $1.25 of donuts. That was exciting.
Well, that's exciting. What about you? What about you, Nick? What have you been up to?
Last week has been pretty boring, but the week before last.
Oh, yeah, because we weren't here last week.
Yeah, we weren't here last
week. There's a hiatus.
I had a pretty crazy weekend.
Oh.
Some friends were here. We went to a nightclub actually like really close by that wasn't in D.C. or anything, so I didn't expect anything crazy. But then like in the middle of, like we were all dancing and having fun, and then they turn on the lights, you know, it's about to close, and people are still dancing, and then this like brawl breaks out.
What?
And, like, every single person there was fighting, like men, women, like everybody was going at it.
Were you fighting?
No. I was outside. I was like looking in. I was like, what?
So if no police officers were listening to our podcast, were you fighting?
No.
Yeah.
Then there's blood everywhere. People were like covered in blood, and there were people like kicking each other on the ground, and like a bunch of guys like beating people. And then we were like walking to our car, and we hear like something like sounded like gunshots or something. We're like, ugh. But it was like, I don't know, paintball guns or airsoft guns or something, and the cops were shooting at people. I was like,
cops were shooting paintball guns at people
or something, like
rubber,
airsoft
rubber
guns.
That seems like just escalating the problem,
trying to stop
rather than calming it down,
like riot stuff. It was crazy. It was nuts.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then the next day I went to the Lincoln Memorial. It's pretty cool.
To reflect on everything you deserved in this country. So viewing the brawl afterwards, do you think that the women or the men were scrappier? Who was like the worst opponent to face off in there?
In the fight Olympics.
The men were pretty intense, yeah. Because there was like
Tyson's Corner 2012.
Yeah. There was guys like covered in blood. It was pretty crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. That was fun.
Cool.
Bring it, Kevin. What you got?
I watched some TV.
What you see?
I read some comic books.
Yeah.
Played some video games.
Nice.
Much, much more interesting than what Nick did.
Yeah, definitely.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't 2 weeks is a long time. My brain is scrambled. I've just been working on SPX, the Small Press Expo.
That's important.
A lot of my time has been dedicated to that recently.
That'll happen.
Yeah, it'll happen. But it's been fun. I'm excited about the show. So
yeah,
that's an upcoming event, which I didn't read any of the upcoming events. But, you know, you can find them.
Just fine.
This is not the week for it.
Nope.
We got 2 weeks worth of stuff. We've got some good stuff coming up. We got a bunch of questions
from
the past couple of weeks. We got an interview with Mike Rex, creator of Fangbone.
Woo-hoo.
So you guys stay tuned for that. We got, what else we got? We got some reviews, and we got under here, under interview, I still have the questions from when Matt Dembiski was on the show, and it just says, why sharks?
Nice.
Because they're cool.
Yeah. So, but we do have some news to start things off. Well, maybe we should do that. What do you guys think?
Let's do it.
Coming in on the wire, we got Nick with the news.
This just in, Rob Liefeld leaves DC Comics.
Hooray!
My first thought when hearing this was like, oh, thank God, finally. But then what he says about all this is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it seems like he was quite candid.
This is from part of the stuff he sent out, like a, I don't know, like a press
these,
release.
These are all tweets.
Email or tweet.
These are all tweets.
These are all tweets.
Yeah.
Oh. He said, I just finished sending my thank yous to DC personnel. Officially got off the DC 52 treadmill this morning. Another tweet, he says, Scott Clark will be replacing me in Deathstroke. Marat, I don't know who that is, will continue their work on Grifter. Had a great time at DC. I believe in what DC is doing, but I had to preserve my sanity. He said, I walked off all three books. Can't wait to see any attempts to spin. Have every email. So basically he's saying, like, can't wait to see what they're going to say about it.
Yeah.
And he has every email proof. To prove that, you know. And
he said, so he goes from saying he supports what DC's doing, basically saying, hey, I hate you.
The last few are the craziest. He says, well, first is the zeros are my last issues. Thanks for all the love. This is the fourth time I quit in the last 4 months, and this time it will stick.
Nice.
And, it's pretty crazy.
Well, isn't there a shout-out to someone cool?
He said I would put Justin Jordan on Deathstroke and Grifter in a heartbeat.
Our Justin Jordan?
Yeah.
Our own Justin Jordan.
Wait, there's a little more.
Wait, there's more.
Yeah. He said, I guess he's writing a book, because he says, I thought the image section of my book would never be topped. And he said, but this last year was a humdinger.
No, I think what he means there is when
the book of life.
He's talking about like his portfolio or whatever. And I think he's like saying the image thing that he went through probably with Robert Kirkman.
Yeah,
the thing where he was kicked off a book because he just had an inker basically drawing his stuff. I think he's saying he thought that situation would never be topped. But
no,
this
I think
is
it
a
was
real
more
humdinger.
Just like him rising through image, like that part of his life.
Yeah, I don't think he's writing a book.
Yeah, right.
I wish it would.
He says the DC 52 chapters will top all of it.
Yeah, see
that. Anyway, he says the reasons are the same as everyone's that you hear, which are like Chris Roberson said something like about similar like editors or well, the last part says I lasted few months longer than I thought possible. Massive indecision, last minute, and I mean last minute changes that alter everything. Editor pissing contest. No thanks.
Wow.
Yeah. He also references Gail Simone, Chris Roberson, John Rosum, all sort of leaving for the same reasons.
The very last line is the best part. So last week, my editor said, early on, we had a lot of indie talent that weren't used to rewrites and changes. It made it really hard. And then he said, no, it's you.
A zinger from Robbie Liefeld.
So this seems like in keeping with some of the other things that we've heard.
Yep.
Like from John Rosen left Static Shock, a character that he helped create.
Yep.
And
we picked up on this earlier, and we've been talking about it, I think, throughout
been
the podcast.
Some rotations on those books.
The books that seem to be still good and doing well are the ones that have the least editorial, you know, messing with
interference
and seem to be by those indie talents that they are complaining about.
Yeah, like Scott Snyder
and Jeff Lemire, who is straight out of indie stuff.
Yeah,
and Matt Kent.
Yeah. Yeah, their books are the best.
Yeah. So I don't know if Scott Snyder comes out of indies, does he?
Yeah.
Did he have one book before?
Well, he did, like, I guess American Vampire.
Yeah.
No, he just came out of nowhere, which is an indie in most ways.
But yeah, so it's, yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on what's going on over there. You know, Keith Giffen also came out and said, or not Keith Giffen, George Perez came out and said something similar as well at that Superman convention.
So if DC is listening, just stop messing with people's stories and just let them write what they want to write.
I don't think anybody at DC would want to listen to this podcast.
We had that one Vertigo editor who was probably fired after admitting he listened to us. So if you're still out there, we're sorry.
Yeah.
But that's all the news we got this week. I mean, it's a...
Well, we've got a little piece of news about Big Planet Comics as well.
There's a few other things, do we?
We do?
What does it say?
It's right on there.
Oh. So
go on.
Recently, what newspaper was it?
It was, I don't know.
It's not important. There was a survey.
There was a survey, and Big Planet Comics was
of Vienna
was voted Fairfax County's best comic book store with 51% of the vote.
51% of the vote.
We have a mandate.
That was 14 votes.
Yeah.
That's not important.
But we still did it. Yeah. So
we did it.
Yeah, we did it. You guys.
Our team has brought us through. Thank you, everyone.
And that's the news.
That is the news. Sometimes I want to play the news theme again after
it
we do the news.
It was cracking me up.
All right. So should we do? Let's do some viewer mail. We have a lot of viewer mail this week. You guys ready for this?
Yeah. Yes.
We're gonna keep this thing moving right along. All right. Up first, we've got a question from Aaron M. The M is for mysterious.
Mysterio.
He says, guys, love the show. It's become one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It wasn't at first, I guess.
We had to win him over. Yeah.
He says he looks forward to it every week.
Nice.
Except for last week.
Thanks, man. You all are doing an awesome job. Question for you all.
Especially yes. Nick, it says.
I skipped that part. And so did he. What are your most prized comics or comics-related materials? So I'll start off with that.
Oh, okay. Well, prized comic. I guess, I don't know anything. Ooh, I'd say, like, Walking Dead, number one, is pretty cool.
You do.
Just because I feel like I'm like, yeah, I got...
It made money.
I was there from the beginning.
That's true.
Yeah. But, I mean, and, you know, it's also worth money, yeah. But as far as other things, I would say... A lot of the sketchbooks and stuff I've kind of accumulated are pretty valuable to me because they're kind of one of a kind things.
It's true,
more personal. Cool. Yeah, you should tell people about your sketchbook.
I have one sketchbook that's just basically everybody asks everybody to draw their favorite cartoon character.
That is a good
theme. So I've gotten some varying ones. I got some Ninja Turtles, some Simpson characters. Got some Chester Cheetah,
a Thunder the Barbarian by Benjamin Mara, pretty awesome,
and Little Caesars. Whatever the mascot is by Johnny Ryan, which is really cool.
Little Caesar, I'd imagine.
I think his first name's Pizza, his last name's Pizza.
Yeah. Well, his middle name is Pizza, too.
Oh, so it's Pizza, Pizza, Pizza.
Yeah.
Mine is probably, I've got a Fantastic Four 51, which I like a lot.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Which is one of the few comics I've ever paid more than like $20 for.
Yeah.
I think I paid like $30 for it. And I'm trying to think, I mean, I've got some like signed, I have a signed Blankets by Craig Thompson that has a picture that he drew in it that's like really amazing.
Don't you have a couple at least one like commission or something?
A commission?
I thought you did.
I've got I do have the first page, the original page of Roger Langridge's Muppets comic.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
That's a good one. What about you, Jared?
I've definitely picked up some original art over the years. Not a lot. I probably should be getting more, but my favorite is one of the covers to one of the issues of the Heavy Liquid series that Paul Pope did. Wow. He said he wasn't really selling stuff, and I'm like, "Well, I'll buy it from you right now." And he's like, "Really?"
So, Jared, before you continue,
yes,
have you invested in original art or collector's pieces of a creator or work that you love or had to have?
No, because it's not an investment. I will never part from this.
Well, you spent money on it.
It's not an investment, though. It'll be buried with me.
Oh, so the next question is: are you just going to talk about the semantics of this question?
Yes.
And then, what made you make the purchase? And is there anything you wish that you had that you plan to get in the future? Like any stuff you'd like to get from an artist? And he says, "Thanks so much.
Just more sketches.
Thank you."
What about you? Anything you're looking to get in the future?
Yeah, I mean, the problem with working at a comic store is it's so easy to get almost all comics. So for me, my big interests are like European comics that were translated into English, which was like a big surge in the 80s. So I kind of like collecting those old ones. You know, stuff I collect more how to print graphic novels. It's kind of weird. There's all this good stuff you just can't find anymore. But definitely more original art. I like that stuff.
I'd like to get some commissioned pieces. That'd be pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
I want... there was a video for the Hero Initiative, and it had Jack Kirby's granddaughter in it,
really?
And she had Jack Kirby's desk. I'd like to get that. So I'd like to stage some sort of like Ocean's 11 style heist and breaking
Big Planets
house.
3.
Yeah, I feel like if I drew on it, it would just it would make me like a magician of art.
You would create the next Spider-Man.
I would.
Are you gonna like draw on it with like a knife? Just like draw into the surface of the
KP
desk?
Was here. So thanks for the question, Aaron M. Aaron Mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got another question here. You guys want to hear this question?
Shoot.
It says it's more of a recommendation.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
But this guy Pete Lauer,
mm-hmm.
no relation to Matt Lauer, I assume.
Wow, that's quite an assumption.
Never assume
that. You make a.
I thought Matt Lauer told us his brother was going to be listening.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know that. Well, this is Pete Lauer, Matt Lauer's brother, and he says, "I'd like to hear about new jumping on points each week. I'm not going to go back and read 600 plus issues of Amazing Spider-Man, but when there's a new arc beginning, plenty of us would love to hear about it. Well, you're in luck because this week we're going to talk about the new issue of Amazing Spider-Man, which is a good jumping on point.
Yep,
nice.
But we've done it a little bit. We did it with Justice League Dark when that switched writers.
Yeah.
We tend to do it more when like a new creative team comes on.
Yeah."
And you'll be hearing about a lot of new jumping on points soon when all the Marvel Now stuff starts coming out. Yeah. But yeah, that's something we should keep our eye on.
I would like to say, though, of those 600 issues of Spider-Man, you should go back and start with number one.
It's a good one.
Yep.
Maybe even start with Amazing Fantasy 15.
That's a better jumping on point. I'd recommend that one.
But just read the Spider-Man story in there. The rest of the stuff's just all right.
Yeah.
He says, you guys are awesome.
Thanks, dude. Oh,
yeah, Pete Lauer. People wow. they're giving us a lot of love.
I think
on
fawning
here.
Is the word I'll use.
Yeah, I'll say that. Okay, so we've got a voicemail.
Oh,
so this is actually happening, you guys.
Oh,
hopefully I'm pressing the right button here. But here's the voicemail.
Hello, love the show, guys. I was just came by the Bethesda store and picked up Spawn issue 222. I was looking at it as a fun. Light read, but it turns out it was quite different. So I was wondering what were your guys' most disappointing or misleading covers. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks for the question.
Mystery caller.
Yeah, mystery caller. A good piece of advice, don't ever buy Spawn.
Especially yeah, 222, yeah. Which is one-third of the number of the Beast.
Well, 222 was like the amazing, it was like, looked like the Amazing Fantasy 15 right. cover, right?
They're doing like these weird homage covers.
And you're like, oh, maybe this is like a fun, funny issue.
It's like he teams up with a Spider-Man. No.
And then it was probably just like super dark and gritty and depressing. So
makes me want to read it, though.
So most misleading covers, though, that's kind of a tough one.
Well, actually, a kind of reverse misleading cover. Like a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Creep Number Zero.
Right.
So remember the cover? I looked at it and it was like this terrible like
Frank Miller
drawing. Like looks like he drew it like in his sleep or something. And I was like, oh God, I'm not gonna read that. And then like I didn't look at it for a while. And then I was like, I'm just gonna peek inside. And I was like, holy, this is amazing. And then like I almost didn't read it because of the terrible cover.
Yeah, I think that applies. Like Howard Chaykin's another one that just puts me off terribly, and he does a lot of covers for some reason. But man,
it happens a lot too. Whenever the artist who does the cover is not the interior artist, it always is the worst. I mean, sometimes it's good, like in that case of the Creep. But
oh, like the Ms. Marvel or Captain Marvel, the new series.
Yeah, the new Captain Marvel was a good example.
Very different, not a bad, but very different interior style.
Yeah,
but
you see the cover and you're like, it looks great. I like it. Look cartoony and kind of fun and lighthearted. And inside, and it's like dark and crappy looking. It's just the worst.
And then there are all the old, of course, like the really old like DC covers that would be like, you know, it's like the Flash cover that's like, hey kids, buy this issue or I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you'd buy the issue. Well, and he wouldn't die, so maybe it wasn't very misleading.
That wasn't misleading. Kill House was a close one.
Yeah, so that's a tough one. Maybe we should have done.
We should do some research on that.
We should have done a little research.
Because I'm sure there's some that like had a really, I don't know, like a great. There's probably more that had great covers. Because that's the thing, like oh, this got
you
me.
You know, every comic from the '90s is the answer
no,
to that.
Because I'm thinking
like,
about that.
Die Cut Wolverine number 50 was a crappy comic.
No, do you remember
awesome
like
cover?
When Mike Mignola was drawing covers all the time, and like I loved him so much, I would just buy it. And then I get home and I'll be like, oh, he didn't draw anything in this comic.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even like a Hellboy comic. It was just Mignola doing a cover.
A recent one is there was that It Girl and the Atomics miniseries, which normally all those Madman related things are drawn by Mike Allred, and the cover is drawn by him. And so you're like, oh, cool, I'll pick it up. And then the inside is like completely different.
Not even
written or drawn by him.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
And it's not Nick Dragota just drawing like
no,
him.
No.
Oh, weird. Yeah, I didn't know that. So, hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah.
Mystery caller, maybe related to Aaron Mystery, but so let's see, we've got two more questions, so things are going crazy in this week. All right, so here we go. No, well, this is the part we like, kidding. Right?
Yeah, like,
I'm gonna be saying when we have to review all these stupid Before Watchmen books, but okay. So this is a question from Matt Starchak, who is a star in our hearts.
Matt Starchak,
he's more of a Jack.
This is from Matt Starchak. He says, I really love the show. It is by far my favorite Vienna based comics podcast.
Which is actually saying something.
Well, I
how many stores there are in Vienna that sell comic books,
and I listen to one from Vienna, Austria. That's pretty good, but
take that, Vienna Craft Review.
So recently a friend and I were talking about the webcomic Our Valued Customers, which is created and drawn by a comic shop employee. He claims each comic is based on conversations he overheard while working in a comic shop. Do you have any funny stories or humorous quotes that you have overheard while working at Big Planet? Thanks and keep up the good work.
So
the only problem with this question is we don't like to like, of course, funny things happen in comic stores, but you don't like to really talk bad about your customers.
I have a good
one. Well, this guy does. Apparently, Our Valued Customers I think it's just that .com or the website. But yeah, he works at some store. I'm thinking it's Boston. He doesn't say where, and it's all anonymous. But like, it has to be an urban city because like, they're just psychotic people. Like, I've never seen that level of psychosis. There's always some weird people who come in, or some people who just say silly stuff.
Yeah,
but the guys in his things are scary, like terrifying.
I've got kind of a funny one. This little kid comes in and he
oh yes,
he asked us if if we had the new Rogue comic. And I was like, well, there hasn't been a Rogue comic in a long time. And he was like, this little kid, he has a southern accent. And he was like, well, I know it's new because it said all new on the cover.
Yeah. I thought you were thinking about another one. Do you remember when that kid came in and he's looking for War Machine?
Oh, that was awesome.
Oh, and he started singing
Was that
what it was? He's like, War Machine.
War Machine.
That was the best.
Oh, so good.
I have another one too. DC, I always get like crazy people.
When you're working in the DC store.
There's some I couldn't even like repeat, but yeah, they're pretty graphic. But
pretty graphic.
I'll just tell you without using any graphic stuff. But somebody, we have an adult bookstore underneath, and some guy came up and he's like, oh, the guy down there told me you guys have books. You got any adult books? And I was like, no, not really. He's like, you got any Betty Boop? I was like, nah. He bought like a bunch of kids' comics, which creeped me out.
That always creeps me out. That combination, I don't like it. Yeah.
When I worked in the DC store myself, there was this guy who came in. It was like this massive bodybuilder. This happened much more. It seemed to happen more when Paul Najmabadi was working because he was just more friendly to this guy. And he'd come in and he'd be like,
shout out to Paul Najmabadi.
And he'd be like, so, who do you think I look more like, Superman or the Hulk? And he would ask every time he came in the store. Yeah,
that's really funny.
I have one more, which was pretty great. There's this guy that comes into the DC store who's like, this isn't like a bad thing. It's always really awesome. But he came in one day and he had the best response I've ever had to the question, like, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, how are you? And he's like, you know, like this and like that and like this and like that and like this. I just started cracking up. It was just so funny.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, there's all kinds of crazy stuff. We've had
some stories.
We've had other people too, like people who smell and stuff.
Where
you have to open the door for like 2 hours.
I think you should tell the one about the hot selling comic. Oh, those guys were looking for.
That's not more something overheard. That's not something I usually say. Or we all kind of say it.
Yeah.
Like somebody will come in and be like, "Wow, this I can't believe you guys sold out of this comic. Like it must have been really popular." And our response is like, "We only ordered one copy."
Yep.
So that's not really overheard. That's just us being jerks.
Yeah.
100% sell through.
Yeah, there is all kinds of stuff. The best stories we can't really tell you.
Yeah. Come in and ask us, though. We'll probably tell you.
Yeah, we'll tell you if you come in. Yeah.
Off the record.
That's Big Planet Comics, so Vienna, 426. We got one more question. Thanks for the question, Matt.
Yeah.
We've got one more question. This is from Bill Thompson,
mm-hmm.
or Billy T. You can call him whatever you want.
Billy T.
He says, has the art in a comic book ever caused you to stop reading a book that you otherwise liked? I enjoyed Hoax Hunters #0 and thought the art went well with the story type. Unfortunately, the artist changed, and I find it harder to enjoy now. It's not bad art. It just doesn't seem to fit.
Even from the beginning, I guess I would say Captain Marvel.
Yeah. But that was the first thing that came to my mind.
Wow.
I'm trying to think of one where the art changed, which is probably bad. A good one is The Spirit, which was written and drawn by Darwin Cook. And then after like issue 12, it was just like somebody else, and it was just not as good. The whole thing that made it good was Darwin Cook.
Yeah, but then it was a different writer as well, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like just specifically the art. Like of course The Boys, the art changes and it changes to John McRae but I don't ever stop reading it.
I
still love it.
I didn't stop reading it either, but man, it was rough. The new X-Men run by Grant Morrison, where he was doing like 2 or 3 issues a month, and they just were filling in every other issue with some new guy who was just doing like 1 or 2 issues. And
well, most of those were Igor Corday, right?
No.
Who isn't terrible.
He was, but he was doing like 3 issues a month. It's something insane. But oof.
Oof.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one where I just stopped reading something.
Yeah, I think a lot of people stopped with Deathstroke. Or no, which one's the one that's drawn by Rob Liefeld?
Oh, doesn't he draw 2 of them?
Hawk and Dove. I was keeping up with that one until he started doing art.
So you read none of it.
True.
Yeah, I don't know. It's usually when those changes come, it's if the writer is good, because if the writer's bad in the first place, you're not going to be reading it just for the art usually.
Yeah.
And it tends to be like the good artists tend to work with at least decent writers because
mostly.
Yeah, but not always. But I can't think of one where I actually stopped reading it.
Yeah.
Is my answer to the question.
No, there's probably more that we're just not thinking of because we're like, ugh, and we just forget about it. But
yeah, well.
It happens.
Yep.
All right. So that's it for questions this week. Only like 37 questions. Yeah. So if you guys have questions, You can send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com, or you can leave a message on the podcast hotline, which somebody did. Do you guys remember when that happened, like a few minutes ago?
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was great. So that means we're going to keep the line open for at least another month.
All right.
So that number again, 1-703-539-CAST. And I mean, again, from when I said it earlier. Yeah. All right. So that's it for questions. You guys want to move on to reviews? We're moving this thing right along.
Do we want to do an interview
we
first?
We should do that first.
Yeah.
All right. So up now, we have an interview with Mike Rex. He's the creator of a children's book called Fangbone, which we've talked about on the show before.
He's also done such other kids' books as Goodnight Goon.
And Runaway Mummy.
And Furious George Goes Bananas.
Yeah, so he came in to do a signing this past weekend, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and he was a really good guy to talk to. So here is that now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're here with Michael Rex, the writer of Fangbone, and also Goodnight Goon, the New York Times number one bestseller, which I just found out this morning.
Nice.
And Runaway Mummy and a bunch of other stuff too. Mm-hmm. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me down here.
No, it's definitely good to have you here. We're big fans of Fangbone. Maybe we're not the target age, but we've been having a lot of fun reading them.
You know, it's funny. It's actually been a little unexpected, but there's been a lot of people in their 20s, somewhere around there, saying, oh, I really like this. I'm a little like, I want to read it before my kids get it and stuff like that. So that's been actually really rewarding. So
yeah, has the book been successful for you?
It's doing well. It's been a little tough to know right now because, I mean, they are doing well at the moment. We are looking to see what's going on in the future with them. But they've been very fun. There's been a really, really deep response to them, I think. I mean, everyone who likes them loves them, which is rewarding.
That's great. Yeah. So it seems like you started out doing more like straightforward children's books. Mm-hmm. What kind of parodies of Margaret Wise Brown books are your two kind of big ones? And then you made the transition into comics. Have you always been a big comics fan?
Yeah, I actually wanted to do comics many, many years ago. I went to SVA. I was in the film department, but I took some comic classes with Harvey Kurtzman.
Oh, wow.
Got to know Kurtzman. Ended up working for Art Spiegelman for about a year. I didn't really work next to Art. I was an assistant of an assistant with R. Sikoriak, who does Masterpiece Comics.
Yeah, those guys are all amazing.
Yeah. So I got to kind of know those guys when I was young, but a little bit after that, I was kind of doing comics, and at the time, it was the early 90s, and everyone was doing these very graphic,
pouchy
exposés about their lives and their personal lives. Yeah. And I was like, God, it's not really me. And I found the picture books, and around 95, I started doing picture books. And I know all these guys. I mean, Ed Brubaker used to come to our house and sleep on the couch. And Kevin Pyle, you interviewed, I believe, or you reviewed a couple weeks ago. He was another guy in Brooklyn, and Mike Kupperman, and Sam Henderson. All these guys, they were all around at the
right
same
the thick
time.
Of it.
So,
yeah, those are all people that we really love.
Yeah, and I was right outside in picture books while they were all in comics. So,
but then you decided to come back to comics.
I pitched Fangbone to my editor after the parodies, and I had pitched it as a very illustrated chapter book, like Captain Underpants.
Mm.
And he sat there and he said, no, it's a graphic novel. And I said, that's kind of an interesting idea. And he said, you know, there's Baby Mouse out there, and there's Lunch Lady, and things like that, and there's these little digest size happening. And I said, I didn't even think about that. And he said, no, this is what we should do. And little did I know that he had a complete run of Savage Sword at home in his closets, you know, so he was a real barbarian fan and sort of clicked, you know.
And were you also like, did you grow up with Conan books and things?
I grew up with the Conan movie. I really didn't. I read the books later, but I sort of was aware of the comics, but it was the movie in 82 I was really, really into and stuff, and it's one of my faves, you know.
So are you a big fan of kids' books as well? Do you keep up with other things or like kids' comics?
I think I stepped out for a while, but a couple years ago, as Fangbone was ramping up and I was really thinking about this, I sort of caught up. There's been a lot of big things happening lately. I mean, it's nice to see something like Smile getting outside of the comic shops and out. So not, no offense, but, you know, I mean, the comic shops is where it started, but it's one of these things
where
we need to get
a little bit ghetto-wise.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. We need to, you know, it's good to see schools supporting comics, which is a big step. And if we can do that and get them to say, like, oh, well, there's, you know, quality literature here, even though it's drawn, that's a wonderful thing. And that, I feel, is starting to happen.
Yeah, I think Scholastic kind of started all that with Bone.
Bone, exactly.
Getting all those books into actual libraries and getting them into kids' hands, which, you know, There's not too many kids. I mean, a lot of kids come into comic stores, but a lot more kids go to libraries.
Yeah, that, yeah. Or to book fairs mm-hmm. at school. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad to see that Bone has kind of started that, and it's just kept going. I mean, I think stuff like Amulet now you mm-hmm. see at schools, and Fangbone, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Scholastic picked up Fangbone, so it was in the book fairs in the spring. Hopefully in the fall it'll pick up again. So
do you have a long-term plan for Fangbone? Is it a certain number of volumes, or...?
At the moment, we're not contracted for any more at the moment. It's kind of a hard thing to talk about right now because there are contracts, and I've seen them, and they're going back and forth for something else that's Fangbone related that's really exciting.
Oh.
But I'm not sure if Fangbone is going to continue in this format. I'm at the point where I love these characters and I love drawing them. I'm at the point where I'm researching webcomics right now because I'm like, you know what? I just want to keep working with these guys while these other things, because these other things might take a while. And I think webcomics are very interesting, and I've been watching them, but I'm also trying to figure out how to do it for kids who I don't believe are going to want to come back 3 times a week to read one page.
Yeah, I can see that. And also, I think monetizing webcomics is kind of this weird thing where you make most of your money off of the very hardcore fans who are willing to buy a book of things they've already read. While a kid, if they're going to go online and just read the comic, to them, that's probably the end of it.
Exactly, exactly. So, the way I see it as far as monetizing that is if I have these 3 volumes in the stores and you can bring in more readers for short stories and just getting them interested in the characters and they can come back to these books. That's sort of the way I look at it, as sort of a way to make it worthwhile financially. So,
yeah.
Which is a tough thing with the webcomics. I mean, I see...
Comics in general.
Well, yes, that's true. Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's such a weird time now where we're looking at giving away stuff for free and figuring out how to make money off it.
That's why, we're sort of constantly aware of the fact that people can go get free comics all the time if they want to, but they still come into stores, which is nice for us for now.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
So I was doing some research on you. Mm-hmm. I was stalking you on the internet.
Sure. No, that's what it's
and,
for.
And I saw that you were on an episode of Celebrity Apprentice, and I just wanted to know if you could tell us a little bit about that.
The previous season, I worked for a day, and I drew a 24-page picture book that was written by LaToya Jackson and Dionne Warwick and that whole crew. And basically, and it was, you know, I literally came in, they mic you up, they sort of tell you some rules that you can and can't do, and they say, here's everyone. You walk into those little war rooms, and you start, and you're just like, wow, that's it. And you know, it's very much... At 10 o'clock, you're done. That's it. And I just worked with them and did what they said to do. And it was quite an experience. It was actually kind of weird because, you know, you think, oh, celebrities, what are they going to be? After a while, it was just people trying to get something done.
Yeah,
and you're just like, oh, you know, Marley Maitland, could you come over here? Could you help me with this? Or could you get me a sandwich? You know, that sort of thing. No, because they're like, that was so funny. They're like, one thing, they have to feed you and they have to take care of
you.
So I'm like, okay, you know, so, but.
Did LaToya Jackson make you a sandwich?
No. Actually, Marley Maitland bought me a sandwich.
Wow, that's great. That's pretty great.
LaToya, I had a wonderful, the character we were working on was based on LaToya. And at first we were like, well, she should have all this jewelry because it's LaToya. And they were like, well, but it's a little kid's thing. And so I started talking with LaToya about, I had this big, long conversation with LaToya about bling and how much bling should the character have. And she pulls out, she's got all this jewelry on, and she was so lovely. And then she pulled out an exact set in silver because she had the gold ones on right now. So she was deciding during that day which one to wear, the gold or the silver. So, and she had both with her.
So she had a complete other set of, like, Mr. T level of jewelry in her
exactly
pocket.
With her, yes. Yeah. It's like you or I carrying another shirt around or something, you know. So
I was going to ask you what you're working on next, but it seems like maybe it's a little bit secretive.
No, I can actually tell. This is stuff that was started a while back. I'm working on 3 chapter books called Icky Ricky. For Random House, and they come out about this time next year. They are not graphic novels. They're illustrated chapter books, a lot of illustration. And it came out, they started a little bit while I was thinking about parodies because I was in the bookstore and I was just looking around and I saw this wall of Fancy Nancy. And I said, what would a boy version of Fancy Nancy be? And I said, oh, yeah, Icky Ricky or Gross Gus or something like that. So it just came out of that, and it was another format I've wanted to try for a while, and it's one nice thing about where I'm at my career right now. I'm sort of meeting people who want to work with me and want to see, you know, I've got a lot of ideas, but it's also what formats, where do you want to go? You know, do you want to do an illustrated book? Do you want to write a novel? Do you want to go back to a picture book? And, you know, I want to try it all and see what happens.
That's fun, though, being able to move around between stuff.
Absolutely.
Like that. Let's keep it fresh, at least.
It is. I mean, the thing I'm working on now, it's a real book. I mean, it was actually, was it 8,000 words for me, which was a huge deal.
Wow,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm writing picture books for years.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, I'll definitely check out Icky Ricky. It sounds like a Garbage Pail Kids type book or something.
It's not that high concept. It's really just this kid who's kind of gross but really well-meaning.
All right, well, thanks, Michael, for stopping by and talking to us on the podcast.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks. Take care.
Boom. Person interviewed.
That's what we do.
Yeah, and if you guys want to like check out Mike Rex's stuff, we'll put some links up to his webpage, or you can always just come in the store and buy his comics.
He's a really great guy, so I recommend it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fangbone is sweet.
Yeah, yeah, he's awesome, too. All right, cool. Well, you guys ready to do some reviews?
Ready.
Yes. Let's do it.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
All right, we've got quite a few books to review this week because we skipped last week because of me, I guess, mostly. Jared was
mostly
gone, and there was
I was ready. I was exhausted.
You were not ready for this jelly.
I was, no.
All right, so up first this week, we've got Amazing Spider-Man number 692. This is by Dan Slott and Huberto Ramos. And then it's got some backup stories, one by Dean Haspiel, and then one by Joshua Halfiakoff and Nuno Plotti.
Nuno Plotti. So this is kind of the 50th anniversary issue. It's the beginning of the lead into the big issue 700.
So is this a good jumping on point for a new story arc?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a good jumping on point for a new story arc.
You hear that, Mr. Mysterious?
As Jared said. Yeah, because it does a good job at the beginning of kind of giving you a rundown on where Spider-Man is at the time right now and Peter Parker's job and
New
stuff
York
like
City.
That. Yeah.
Teacher,
basically, this is the first time they've introduced a sidekick for Spider-Man, and it's done in a pretty interesting way where it kind of echoes his origins. There's a young kid who's caught up in a science accident, which is actually caused by Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And he becomes this super powerful superhero, and he's kind of arrogant and, you know, almost out of control. And so...
And his name's Alpha, because they're saying he's an Alpha-level hero, which is, like, higher than Omega-level. And Omega-level's, like, Galactus or something like that.
It's crazy.
Really weird.
He can end all of existence.
Or that he has the potential to be that level.
And so all the heroes come together, and they're like, look, this is your fault, Spider-Man. I need to take care of this. You now have a sidekick. And then Spider-Man tells him, like, oh, well, you've been put into the sidekick program. And, you know, the kid starts getting an ego. And at the end, Spider-Man's kind of like, oy vey.
is that what he does?
He says something.
See,
something
this is why I like Nick's Spider-Man comics better than the professional ones.
Well,
they're much better written.
A lot of that stuff actually it happens in the Dean Haspiel backup, which he says a lot of stuff like that.
Well, that part's actually great. But back to the main story. Did it seem a little strange that sort of for this 50th anniversary story, it's not a story about Spider-Man, really?
Yeah. It's kind of weird that it's kind of a story about. Well, but the thing is, it does like
it does mirror his origin.
It does mirror his origin, like almost like, you know, exactly like the same.
So, how did you guys feel about this new character, Alpha? He's kind of like a little
jerk.
He's a jerk, but I guess he's sort of like how Spider-Man was when he was doing the wrestling stuff, or like when he was getting his uncle killed.
Yeah, this is kind of like Spider-Man seeing himself at the beginning through you know his own eyes.
Yeah, but still, the problem is that they had these two really good backup stories, and this one was kind of the least interesting to me of the three.
I don't know. I thought it was pretty interesting. I like the setup, and it seemed like it was fun. I like the fact that he's kind of like a little jerk and that he's super powerful. And
There is something I like about the sort of ease of storytelling with Dan Slott at this point. He's been writing Spider-Man for such a long time, and he manages to, like, it seems like he enjoys it. Like, that kind of comes through on the page a little bit. Like, the stories are always fun, even if he's not, you know, like the story by Dean Haspiel is obviously kind of like a totally different thing, so it feels fresh. But I think Dan Slott's doing a good job with the book, and I thought that this was a pretty good story. But the Dean Haspiel story is really, like, to me, I was like, oh well, what an interesting idea. It's like a very iconic take on a very iconic Spider-Man story.
Wait, so did Dean Haspiel do the one?
He did the first backup.
He did the one that looked like it was drawn by Dean Haspiel.
Yeah, that's the kind of remember which one it was. Basically, the story in it.
There's like, the Spider-Man No More. Day? No, you know, in the classic Spider-Man No More comic where he throws his suit in the garbage can.
Oh,
on the
yes!
Cover. And
oh,
this is about
so
a criminal
good.
That finds that suit.
Yeah, so this is more what I expected from the 50th anniversary issue, more like looking back at the history of Spider-Man and kind of working with that. I mean, I guess they did that. It just, like you said, it wasn't focused on Spider-Man. So this is like when he gives up Spider-Man, he's just like, I can't be a superhero anymore. I just need to deal with Peter Parker's problems. And he just throws a suit. And there's the iconic picture of it lying in a trash can. And so seconds later, a criminal comes up and sees it. He's like, wait a minute. I can just put on this suit and do whatever I want to do. So he ends up trying to become like a super villain, just running around in a Spider-Man suit and being like, you know, still using a gun. And he just has like the most inept day where everything goes wrong for him. And but I like that it had kind of a good twist ending to it. That kind of, yeah, that got back to kind of what Spider-Man is about himself, kind of like, you know, making, I don't know, the right choice and tough decisions. Yeah. And,
well, and also the ending of that story very much to me made it feel like a very classic, like 60s Marvel story. Yeah. It reminded me a little bit of like This Man, This Monster, which is something I was talking about earlier. But it was really good.
And then the last backup, I really liked that one. It's Joshua Hill Fiokov, right?
Yep.
Yeah, the guy's been writing I, Vampire.
Yeah, and it's just, Spider-Man is so funny in it. I thought it was the best of the three things, even though the other two were.
Yeah, but again, like the other two weren't super focused on Spider-Man.
And this one was just Spider-Man having like a really
worst
bad
day ever.
But it's really funny, and he finds another kid that's being bullied that reminds him of himself when he was younger, and takes him on basically patrol with him, and it's really funny and just kind of cute and just good.
Yeah,
I mean, it's great.
Yeah, I think that was my favorite.
Yeah, I think they did a good job in the issue, just kind of. Like, instead of just being like a best of or like, you know, a pretty straightforward thing, it seems like they found a way to kind of, you know, work around Spider-Man, like what it means to be Spider-Man and kind of tell a story about that in three different ways, which I think is pretty interesting. Yeah, I thought it was a cool issue. I mean, and if you're looking for a place to jump on, I feel like it's definitely a good spot.
Yeah, and it all leads into issue 700, which was probably be something really crazy.
Yeah, it's weird that issue 700 is coming out already.
Yep.
I guess it comes out every week though, so or every 2 weeks. Yeah. All right. So up next we've got a really, really crazy book. This is called The Art of War. This is a new graphic novel. For who published this? Is like a mainstream publisher?
Harper Perennial.
Yeah, they are a big one. They do like books by The Rock and stuff. so this is written by Kelly Roman, based on a lot of or with interspersed writings from Sun Tzu.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say inspired, but go on.
In a way,
in a way. Anyway,
Art by Michael DeWeese, who as far as I can tell is a fairly new guy that I haven't seen before, and. Oh my goodness.
So
who wants to explain what
first,
this is about?
Is Kelly Roman the name of the main character in this?
No, I don't think so.
No.
What's the character's name then?
I forget.
I think it's Kelly Roman.
No, it's like...
Oh, you guys are killing.
Oh, no, it is Kelly Roman.
See?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Isn't that why it's weird?
Oh, that is weird. I don't think I realized that. Oh, do they say the main character's name in the book?
I think they do, yeah.
Anyway, but so...
All right, so this is like idea... crazy level science fiction mixed with the kind of art of war of like, you know, trying to outthink your opponents and using like all these tactics and stuff in a very corporate militarized future where like the main character, it might be the author's name, Kelly Roman, is a former special forces guy who now has been like cybernetically amped up, so he's super tough, and he comes back and finds out that his brother has been killed. And he was working for a head of a giant corporation whose name was Sun Tzu, which is the guy who actually wrote the Art of War classic book. And he
runs China's global financial empire because China rules.
Yep, that's one of the twists. China's kind of taking over. And so China's like kind of manipulating the American economy as like a business takeover. There's like ideas like this on every page. So it's like hard to even remember
on. It's really hard to kind of give an overall sense of the story. But like,
we just throw out like themes and things that happen.
Well, and so he goes to work for this company where his brother worked after he was killed to try to kind of figure out what's going on. And from there, that's when things are crazy from the beginning.
Yeah.
At the core, it's about him trying to find out what happened to his brother and kind of getting revenge, sort of.
But yeah, but at the same time, like he finds out, you know, a third of the way through the books.
But the rest of it is about him getting revenge.
Well, yeah.
And it's,
but, man, there's like
the thing
so
is like
crazy.
It's got that Philip K. Dick level of idea after idea, and they're all really cool. There's like a guy who he injects himself with something that gives him the ability to talk to ants.
Basically, he grows little like insect antennae his body, so they can communicate and control animals or insects like Ant-Man and.
But that wasn't even the purpose at the beginning. Right. It was like to track like stock markets.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And then so he ends up being attacked by ants because, according to one of the scientists, you smell like God to them.
Yep. Yeah.
And so they'll do whatever he says. And then there's other cool things. There's like this awesome scene where this assassin brings somebody with him, and they go through a metal detector, and there's nothing there. And then you find out that this guy.
Oh yeah.
Who's with him is actually like used as a weapon. He basically injects him with something and then he like melts and he uses his leg, his femur is like a cannon.
Yeah, there's like a concealed weapon built into the guy's bones and he breaks him open and uses
uses rib cage to make like armor for his body. It's pretty crazy.
There's a lot of weird like horrifying like body horror stuff here. There are like a lot of people like melting and getting their arms cut off and then sewn back on.
Genetic body modifications, and then there's like when the guy tries out to get onto the corporation, he's like, all right, here are five of you, you know, who are trying out for this position. And basically you're going to like battle to the death through your course of the day. You're like whoever gets to the office first gets food, you know, it's stuff like crazy stuff like that.
Yeah. And it's really hard to like what it does really well, I think, is it creates like this mood that doesn't really feel like any other graphic novel I've read. Like it's disjointed in a way that I think is kind of intentional.
Yeah.
Like it's very jarring at times, and you never kind of settle into it until maybe like almost halfway through, where it starts to become more of like a regular story. And it's such a crazy, crazy book.
I feel like it's like one of the most original things I've read in like long, long time. And
it's super challenging. I really
liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
I mean, a few complaints. I think the art can be a little uneven.
Yep.
It's a little uneven.
I like the way it's presented, the black and white with like red as well in it. And I think that works, especially when you start to see some of the stuff that's happening in the story. There's a lot of blood and guts in this story.
I would say I didn't really like this like Nick did, but I was really impressed by this.
You didn't like it?
I mean, I liked it, but I did not like really like it, because like you said, there's some problems with it, but like super challenging, super ambitious, and
very
it does crazy stuff. Yeah, just so many cool ideas in it. And
for me, I'm ultimately going to be more interested in something like this that tries, and I don't actually think fails to do something different, and then like then kind of the comics tend to fall into run-of-the-mill genre stuff a lot, whether it's superhero or crime or Western or whatever. And I feel like this at least feels like nothing I've read before.
This kind of reminds me of like the old Jodorowsky comics, like the Meta Barons and stuff.
Yeah,
like every few pages you're like, what? That's crazy.
I can see that, but it's even more dense than those comics.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And to have that kind of level of density but still create like an interesting mood without trying to be like obtuse, like it's very to the point all the time, which I think is interesting too.
And also I just say one of the most original sci-fi books I've ever read, just like doing so much new stuff. I mean, certainly some themes they've done before, but very
I mean, somebody makes like a black hole teleporter which is
this is something I could very much see being made into like a movie.
Ugh.
But like it would be like a Darren Aronofsky movie or something.
That's a good analogy,
because it's got like a lot of action in it, a lot of high stakes, and a pretty solid kind of build up and finale, which is really
honestly cool. I mean, besides some of the tone of it, it feels like the Matrix a little bit, the first Matrix movie. It's a crazy book. I do feel like I said before, the art's a little uneven, and I feel like the integration of the quotes from the text
I think that's
the Art of War are kind of superfluous.
Yes.
But
a little bit, yeah.
But beyond that, I mean, they do kind of thematically fit in with what's going on in the story. But it's like, all right, we get it. These characters are like Machiavellian, and like that you get that within the first few pages. So but it continues throughout the whole book. But I think it's really interesting, and I think it's worth checking out
if you've
got the stomach for it.
Yeah,
because it's pretty gross.
And it takes a lot of concentration. It's not something you could just kind of casually read.
Like I said, this is challenging, but
you're not going to like
really rewarding way
read it in your living room while somebody else is watching TV or something like that. You need to cloister yourself and just lock yourself down and prepare.
Yeah, prepare for the ants.
Yeah, but definitely a cool book. I mean, for me, my highest recommendation, just because I think it's so interesting. And
I love it.
All right, up next, we've got a couple of books that Yeah, that are here.
This we is talk about quickly.
Yeah, before
Let's
Watchmen,
talk about them together.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is before Watchmen. Dr. Manhattan, number one. This is by J. Michael Straczynski and Adam Hughes. And before Watchmen, Rorschach, number one, by Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo.
Otherwise known as the last two Before Watchmen books that Kevin will ever have to read.
Yep, these are the last two Before Watchmen books that I will ever... Wait, what?
Isn't there the seventh
one? Oh, there's an epilogue.
No, no, aren't we waiting for the seventh series to come?
No, I think this was the seventh. This was the sixth and seventh.
Yeah. No, I think you're forgetting one.
Oh, God, I hope I don't have to read any more of these.
This is the last of them. Okay. Except there's an epilogue.
All right, well, you guys talk about these.
All right, so...
Which one are we doing? Both?
I read them,
yeah. Let's do Dr. Manhattan first, because we can kind of bang it out really quickly. This one is basically Dr. Manhattan looking back at his life with his kind of prescient, out-of-time, you know, multiple viewpoints experience. And the entire issue is basically him saying, weird, you know, single decisions can change a lifetime. And then at the very end of the issue, he, like, looks back in his time, at, like, his when he becomes Dr. Manhattan and is trapped in the reactor core or whatever. And things change, and he doesn't become Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, he's like, so, I'm going back and forth through time.
But he will be Dr. Manhattan, so who cares? It's just because there are, like, all the realities exist at the same time.
And forward and back and forward through time.
Right, but this is a different thing. It's not just going backward and forward through time. This is, like, a different reality or different timeline.
One twist that I found in this book, Dr. Manhattan developed a new power, which was the power to make me fall asleep.
Yeah, so that's my point. It's like, that's the last page of this. This could have been the first page.
It's so
like,
boring.
What if I go back in time and look at things and things are different? And then it, boom, new story. So it's like, this entire issue is like recap and pointless.
Also, but I also think even within the context of Dr. Manhattan, because like his whole thing is that all these realities exist at the same time, like this is boring too, because it doesn't really matter. It just makes it have even less to do with Watchmen, which is like... I don't know. It's a lot of Dr. Manhattan, like sort of saying vaguely philosophical, sciencey things that are really boring, and then going, "Hey, what's in the box?" And then he's like, "Nope, not that box." And then there's like another box, and he's like, "What's in the box?"
Yeah,
and he's like, "Nope, it's not this box either."
Yeah, and it's like doing a lot of the Alan Moore and like the layout tricks from Watchmen, and like a lot of images repeating themselves.
The art's good.
Yeah, and the art is good by Adam Hughes. And actually, I feel like. Like what Jared said about, like, this is the book that tries the hardest to emulate some of the artistic tricks and things from Watchmen. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, it fails the most.
The worst.
Of all of them.
Well, it's also like those parts of Watchmen were counterbalanced by action and drama. And, you know, this is just the philosophical parts are, you know, this is all philosophical parts.
And, well, and it's J. Michael Straczynski is just not at this point in his career as good of a writer as Alan Moore was at that point in his career.
True.
And then we got Rorschach, which I actually liked a lot more.
Really?
yeah.
Really?
I love Lee Bermejo. I don't know his art.
Yeah, it's some good art.
It's great.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
I like the story.
Is the art good?
His art's great.
So this is another one set back in the day. So this is when Rorschach is kind of first starting out, and there is a serial killer of sorts going around carving things into women he's murdered.
Yeah.
And you got the Rorschachian journalistic dialogue, and then him going fighting some people.
Don't forget he says Herm.
And he does say Herm.
At all the wrong places, too. Yes. Like, I feel like in the original Watchmen, his Herms are very much like this is a perfect example of what I hate about the world or whatever. Right. And this, he just like says it sometimes before he says other stuff.
Yeah, but again, this one's kind of weird. It kind of sets up a supervillain, which I always felt the whole point of Watchmen is that they didn't really have any supervillains to fight. And they're all kind of like lame, trumped up bad guys.
Kind of. There's one supervillain.
That they treated as supervillain.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, this guy's like Killer Croc or something.
Yeah, exactly. And again, just like... I don't know.
I don't know. I think I liked it just because I don't know. It felt like a
boring
Brian Azzarello comic.
No.
If you took yourself away from the Rorschach part, I felt like you would enjoy it a lot.
I think that's,
but this comic is called Before Watchmen Rorschach.
I think, this is the thing that suffers from it. Like Nick said, you take this out of the context of what it is and just put it as a new comic on the shelf, it would have been okay.
I still don't think it would have been good. It read to me like a Top Cow detective book.
Nah.
Like, it's all, like, cut up dead bodies and, like, it's... dark alleyways.
Yeah, again, I think this is the same thing. They're pulling an element very well out of Watchmen, which is Rorschach's, you know, awful viewpoint on the world and all the terrible things he's dealt with and experienced. Putting it in a single book together is too much, and I don't think... Herm.
yeah, it didn't really work for me.
Yeah.
All right, so next. up next we've got Hulk Season 1. This is by Fred Van Lente and Tom Fowler. Fred Van Lente writes a ton of stuff. Tom Fowler is the artist of Mysteriously Unfathomable.
Oh, really?
And some various other things here and there. But Nick was saying he thought that this was maybe the best of the season one books so far.
Yeah, other than
Fantastic Four?
X-Men. Season one, which was great. Really great.
I thought by the end of this was probably my favorite.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I mean, first of all, the art is just so great. It's like kind of cartoony, but just the right level of comic bookiness. Like, just
yeah it's like the Hulk's face. Like, he draws the Hulk's face, like, it cracks me up sometimes. Yeah,
it's great.
It's just got a very cartoony, but still very influenced by like Jack Kirby and stuff like
and that. You know, like, the problem with a lot of these season one things, it's like, oh, I know all this stuff already, but this is a very kind of different origin of Hulk.
New. Yeah,
yeah, there's a lot more going on. This feels like if somebody was making a Hulk movie, that they were like, let's do this, and it's the origin story but mixed with elements from the early issues of Hulk, like
so it's like the Hulk movie.
Yeah, yeah.
The Angley Hulk movie.
It's not like, but
no, don't insult.
It's great. It's got a lot of like funny things involving Betty Banner, kind of
yeah, she's
really
a
liking
great
Bruce and her kind of liking him,
yeah.
But then there's like another, like a love triangle that develops.
Yeah, like one of his old like scientist rectangle friends who he used to date shows up, so it's like kind of challenging her. I don't know.
And then kind of the kind of main story. Well, I guess the main story is kind of like who is the Hulk, and you know, they kind of capture somebody they think is the Hulk, and it ends up being something different.
And Banner trying to figure out what happened to him. And,
but then there's this other story that's about like these drugs and the way that they create them, that's really interesting, that I don't want to really give away, but it ends up having like a really like sci-fi feel to it, which is really cool. Like, it's got AIM in it, but
it's
they
got
have
a
all
really
these
cool
sort
take
of,
on AIM, yeah,
like bio organic machines and stuff, like spaceships and stuff. It's pretty crazy.
It feels very like retro 50s, but also like very futuristic at the same time, and
which makes sense because it's so based in like the atomic age. But then it feels really new as well.
Man, there's like awesome action in this all over the place too. And just like,
and the Hulk is really
a good story.
He's really funny.
Really
in
funny.
It.
In
That's true. He's like, he's definitely not like the dumbed down Hulk. He's got like some really clever, funny lines. And
but then you even get a little taste of the dumbed down Hulk at one point, which is nice too, because that's always fun. Like, you know, smash puny humans and all that business. But this was just a really good,
awesome,
fun book.
Yeah.
I think people will be surprised by it. Like, when you flip through it, it looks almost like it's something different than what it is.
Yeah.
Because it is very cartoony, and you would think it's like a kid's book, but it definitely deals with a lot of, I would say, pretty extreme, mature
subject topics.
But I thought it was great. And definitely, if you're a Hulk fan, definitely check this out. And if you're interested in checking out the season ones, I mean, either this one or X-Men, I think.
Yeah, both.
Really,
yeah,
it's really good.
It's incredible.
All right, so we've just got well, we just have like four more things.
Oh, jeez.
Up next, we've got something we're just talking about really quick. This is called Maya Makes a Mess. This is a new kids book by Rutu Modan. Does it say on there, like, the creator of Exit Wounds?
Yeah, right.
No.
Okay, that's good. Because this is a comic for like 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds.
It does say in about the author.
No, that's okay.
It was translated into 12 languages. No other comment.
Yeah. But yeah, so Rutu Modan did a really great book called Exit Wounds, which I'm not going to go into, but is definitely worth checking out.
Very mature subject matter.
And this is just a book about a little girl who makes a mess when she eats, and her mom says, well, what if you had to eat with the queen? And then a guard of the queen shows up and is like, Maya has been requested for dinner with the queen. And then they go to dinner. She is really messy when she eats all of her food. Everybody's shocked. And she's like, but it tastes so much better. So the queen's like, all right, well, then tonight everybody eats like Maya. So they all eat their messy food and realize it's fun to make a mess.
Yep. Yep.
And that's pretty much it.
And it's really well drawn. And it's funny at all the right moments. The part where she's just eating spaghetti with her hands is the way it's drawn and the people's reaction to it.
And the strands of spaghetti that go out through to like, they go throughout and like connect the pages together and stuff. Yeah. And all the big dinner scenes, Rutu Modan draws in like a clear line style.
Yeah, I was about to say like a very like if Tintin was goofy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, Tintin's a little goofy.
Not like this.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's really for, you know, little kids, like 4 or 5 year olds, the same age of people that would be reading like Madeline books or something like that. But just a lot of fun and definitely worth checking out.
It's, yeah.
Yep. All right. So now we only have three more things. Next up, I feel like there's a lot to say about this next book, though. This is Only Skin.
Oh, yeah.
New Tales of the Slow Apocalypse by Sean Ford. This is put out by Secret Acres, who put out the awesome Troop 142, which is a book we really like a lot. Yeah.
Indeed.
And this, were these mini comics first and now?
It says he's working on it for like 5 years, so yeah. I sure hope so, because, man.
Well, anyway, we should know more. Project. It is a long book and a really good read, and I don't know. What is it about, Jared?
All right, so the main thing is that a woman and her younger brother come back to this super little town that they used to live in with their parents before they got divorced, where her dad has stayed behind and still is running the gas station where they kind of grew up. And they've come back because he has disappeared and nobody knows what's going on. And they come into town and find that not only has he disappeared, but lots of people are disappearing when they go into the nearby woods, and super creepy, weird things are happening. And the local kind of police force that's just basically one person, volunteers, are like investigating, but they're also kind of caught up in maybe a land scheme out in the woods. So there might be like yeah. things going on, but very quickly you find out that there's some supernatural elements going on, and it's really weird and really creepy and got great characters, and it's, I don't want to say more about what happens.
Yeah, one of the things.
Yeah, that's one of the things. With
one of the things that I thought was interesting at the beginning when it started at first, I was like, oh, this is pretty like, you know, quiet and laid back, and it's just this little gas station, and then they're like, oh, well, there's a pile of fingers over there. I was like, wait, what?
Oh yeah.
But it's all like very kind of.
Well, I think that's a good example of like what the book does, though.
Yeah, it's very mundane, like for the most part, but then. Like something
horror.
Really weird and crazy yeah. will happen, and it kind of builds over time this atmosphere of just like fear. I was just kind of creeped out by the end.
Yeah, it's kind of like if Love and Rocket's characters were in a horror film.
Yeah,
but I like that it doesn't steer into like the sort of like what you would expect from something like this.
No,
like it's not like a Wicker Man type situation or something like that. You
there's
know?
No tropes of like the horror genre like in there. Like
yeah, it's just like a really interesting balance of this. Very like seemed like isolated town,
yeah,
and
the relationships between a lot of the characters that have been there for a while. Like one of the big parts of the story is like her father was having an affair, and so that's why they left. And the woman he had an affair with is actually a central
character.
And a lot of the stuff that happens is based around her experiences, and you get a lot of backstory through her interactions with the main character.
But yeah, like her younger brother very quickly is kind of the lead in the weird supernatural horror stuff going on, and then
because he's haunted by a ghost who looks like a ghost from Pac-Man.
Yeah. Yeah,
he looks like, you know, he looks like a kid dressed up like a ghost from a Peanuts comic or
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly,
and you think that would be really goofy, but it's incredibly unsettling.
Creepy.
It's really, especially when he starts talking about how like he can sense the blood flowing through his veins and stuff
yeah.
like that.
It's so weird.
Yeah, and it's a really. It's a strange book that doesn't feel like anything else I've read.
Yeah.
And I love the ending. It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah. All great. The revelations and stuff.
Yeah. I had no idea where this was going.
Yeah.
It's really well done.
I did not see any of this going.
But every character in this is kind of got their own story arc, and they're all really well developed and all work together really well. And this is so good.
Yeah. It's just got a really interesting... The atmosphere of the whole thing is not like... It's not like Twin Peaks. It's not like Stepford Wives. It's not like those things, or like Wicker Man, or like those things you expect stories like this to be like. It's,
right.
It definitely just has its own feel to it. It's almost like Northern Exposure or something.
Yeah,
but
it's really grounded for what it is.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting. And I think it's interesting how a lot of it's about how the people in this town have sort of gotten used to these things happening.
Yeah.
And it just seems like a regular day-to-day thing. So while in like a movie or something, things would be very manic, but things are still very like Mayberry-ish and slow-moving.
Yeah,
right. And I thought it was a really cool story. I thought it was great.
The one thing I'd say, at first, I don't know if I liked the art. I was kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah, he definitely does like big open panels with like, you know, he does some really good backgrounds, but it's kind of almost simplistic looking.
Yeah, but it kind of grew on me.
How much he's got going on.
Yeah, and it really worked for the story.
Yeah,
I always liked his composition and stuff like that, and the sense of place. At first, I didn't maybe like the way he draws like people.
Yeah,
but
they're almost a little too cartoonish.
Yeah,
like
but
in the faces maybe.
But he actually does a really good job of expressing emotion through the way he draws, and you really start to see like the nuance of it after you start reading a little bit more.
Yeah,
and I think overall it didn't end up being a problem. I really didn't have any problems with this book at all.
Yeah, I actually loved the art by the end. I was like, this is great.
Yeah. So, definitely probably for us the best book of the week.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, Hulk was really good. Art of War was good.
Art of War was really good.
Yeah, I'd say this is the best.
And the next book was really good, too. So here we go. This is Rocketeer, Cargo of Doom, number one, by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, who are basically the current team on Daredevil right now.
The dream team.
Which has been great. The dream team. And, man, this is, no offense to Dave Stevens, you know, obviously, but this is the best Rocketeer comic I've ever read.
And those really? Dave Stevens
early ones?
Yeah, I think, I think for me, way better than the
really?
Early ones.
Because the Dave Stevens ones are so good.
Yeah, I think I haven't read them in a while. I was going to say this is the most Rocketeer of all the new Rocketeer comics.
There was just something about the mood of this that I just, I really liked. Obviously, it's not more Rocketeer than the actual Rocketeer stuff.
Yeah. Chris Samnee is the best artist. I don't know. He's definitely on the top of the A-list.
I thought the dialogue was really good. Well, anyway, we should talk a little bit about the story, which is, you know,
so this is
just getting
a
started.
Very simplistic tale. Like someone was talking about it. We were talking about Rocketeer today. That, you know, they're kind of like not, you know, almost sweet. They're like very old school in like just kind of pure adventure stories, and they're kind of simple in a way. And this one kind of nails that really well. It's just Cliff Secord, I believe his name.
Yep.
Is, you know, he's working out at his airplane hangar, as he is in his disguise when he's not the Rocketeer, and he's having all kinds of problems getting his plane certified. And so the young niece of his friend is kind of doing flying lessons with the creepy inspector who starts like trying to molest her, basically, and he has to go into action. So it's kind of like the Rocketeer dealing with these problems and then like just drama amongst his friends.
But at the same time, they build up this crazy story with this guy who's got some cargo coming in, cargo of doom.
Are you guys getting some creepy and, Dracula vibes off that guy?
Yeah, he's a little Dracula-ish. And then there's like, the one thing that kind of threw me off is like, I was like, it's like very lighthearted and like really fun. And then like something crazy dark happens at one point.
Ooh,
like,
that's true.
Somebody gets their arms eaten off. And I was like, wait, what?
But that's almost like a very Rocketeer-ish kind of thing,
it's,
too.
It's very like pulp.
Yeah.
It's not like childish like some people think the Rocketeer is. Pulp. Like,
yeah. So what I liked about this so much was I thought the stuff they set up is very pulpy with, you know, the cargo coming in, and it's like very mysterious, and there's like mist around things and stuff like that.
Right.
And but then I thought the dynamic between, I can't remember the young mechanic girl's name, but I like the dynamic between her and Cliff, and then
Susie.
Yeah, I thought that was like really like funny and sweet, and kind of I thought the way that he deals like this girl who's like a younger girl, like probably
like
in her
13 or 14,
yeah,
has a crush
she has
on
a crush on him, and he kind of addresses that as the Rocketeer,
rather
and
than
like
kind
group, of,
yeah.
And it's like a lot of really little sweet things like that. And it's funny that his girlfriend, who's like, you know, this Betty Page vixen, beautiful woman, is like getting jealous and stuff. Yeah. Like, I just, all that stuff cracked me up, and I thought it was really well done, and had the feel kind of the current Mark Waid Daredevil stuff in a way.
Good point.
And
a bit of Indiana Jones in there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, it is the Rocketeer.
Yep.
And I loved it. I thought it was great. Maybe I need to go back and read the old Rocketeer stuff, because I haven't read it since like, I think like Kitchen Sink or something.
I think your memory's dulled a bit, but this one is amazing.
Yeah. So Rocketeer, definitely. If you like the Rocketeer, definitely check it out, and check it out anyway.
Highest recommendation.
Our highest, second highest recommendation. All right. So we just have one last book here this week. I didn't actually get a chance to read this, but this is called The Victories. This is by Michael Avon Oeming and Michael Avon Oeming on art and the other stuff writing. Yeah. And this is a comic. Nick, I know you wanted to talk about this.
Did I?
You said you loved this comic.
This is a
Nick. I never said I love this comic.
Oh, yeah, I thought you loved it.
Oh, no.
I thought it was pretty good.
All right, we'll see you guys next time.
This is a new superhero comic in another universe with new set of superheroes, like every other superhero book that's coming out recently.
Yeah.
Which I think is the biggest strike against this.
Is it worth writing off to that extent, or is there something a little more going on in here?
There's more going on, but I was not particularly impressed by
Nick,
it.
Nick, you said you liked this, right?
You said you really liked
it. So why don't you tell people what it's about?
There you go.
First of all, I love Michael Avon Oeming's art. I think it's really, really awesome. God, I don't even know. I feel like I read this like 4 months ago.
All right, I will sum up. There's a team, a super team called the Victories. The main guy in it, I can't remember his name. He's kind of the Batman.
Oh, he's
Faust,
right?
Faustus. Faustus, yeah, who's kind of their Batman analog. And there is a supervillain called, what, the Goat? What's that guy's name? Who's the bad guy?
The Jackal.
The Jackal. The Goat. The Jackal, who is out, like, trying to... It's kind of interesting. He's one of those, like, dark vigilante guys who's, like, out taking down criminal, like, corrupt people. And he's going... The first scene is he's trying to basically kill this judge who's a corrupt judge.
Yeah. So he's like Omar.
Yeah, but he actually kills him because Faustus gets there too late. So it's kind of this, like, you know... And the main... all right, I did find this interesting that, of course, the Jackal is defeated, but his challenge is, like, to Faustus, he's like, you should be on this side of things with me. It's the Joker-Batman dynamic, but he honestly seems to think he'll be able to push Faustus over the edge very soon.
Yeah.
So it would be like if Batman was incredibly more unstable than he is, you know, is like constantly trying to, you know, stay within the lines of not murdering people or whatever. So if he does follow up on that, I'll be much more interested in that. But other than that, I found it kind of a rote story.
Yeah, I only read a few pages. It seemed to be unnecessarily riddled with
profanity, blue language,
like almost to the point where it was just silly. But I don't know. Maybe that was just at the beginning.
That's the Jackal. He's a
yeah. That guy curses a lot, but yeah.
He's a potty mouth.
There's definitely a little bit of that over the topness, but I kind of liked it in that way. I don't know. I'm not even sure what I liked about it now. At this point. I love the art. That's the thing
art
that,
is cool.
That I like most of all, I guess. And the story's interesting enough where I was like not... I didn't say I love this, so like I like it.
Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter.
It's like okay.
All right. Well, yeah, so that's it for this week, I think.
Yeah.
That's everything. We had a lot of comics to talk about.
Woo.
We had an interview.
Yep.
And we had all kinds of stuff. You guys remember when we had all that stuff? Remember
all that? Questions?
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, what do we got going on next week? Anything exciting?
I hope not.
No. Just some more of the same stuff we always do. All right, cool. We'll see you guys later.
See ya.